Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in once again. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring, back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall. With the Tennessee stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, Ron, I got to tell you, the last Studcast was really special. It was the first ever in more than 7 years, that's 376 Studcast, that had four audio inserts in it from two Southeastern TV shows, recorded in late October of 1980. The first of many coming in the future. I thought they added a great deal to the show and really fun to listen to.
Yeah, so did I, Dave. But nothing compares to what's on its way, man, in the next few weeks. Having sound is one thing, but we're going to have the ability to show in video for the first time actual classic Southeastern TV shows recorded as far back as early 1983. 81. I should say, instead of 83, we're going back to 81.
Yeah.
All the way, and then we're going to take it all the way from there into 1985 with these TV shows. So by the end of this month, this should happen, hopefully, around the end of this month in December of 2024. And it's what I've been waiting for, man, for more than 7 years. It's going to upgrade the quality of the Studcast experience dramatically.
Well, you've been working like crazy on this, on making this whole thing happen to not only upgrade your Studcast, but there's so much going on at the same time. You're about to start taking subscribers for a new streaming channel that is specifically designed for bringing back the memories of all of your wrestling companies. So cool.
Yeah, man. I've wanted for 7 years, man, to be able to bring as many as possible. Those Southeastern, the Continental USA TV shows back to life, man. And I've only been able to find one from the original Knoxville Southeastern Territory. That was in 1978. But now I have almost 80 from the Gulf Coast Southeastern Territory alone. And I'm constantly searching for more. In fact, if there's anybody out there that has any connections or knowledge of any Southeastern, Continental, or USA TV shows anywhere, if you can message me on Facebook on either of my two wrestling sites, Ron Fuller Welch or Ron Fuller the Tennessee Stud, and I'd love to have some information on finding some more of them.
All right, so I know your Ron Fuller Welch site is full of friends and can take no more, but the Ron Fuller the Tennessee Stud Facebook site can take an unlimited number of friends. So if you know where any of the TV shows that you just mentioned can be found, all anyone having to do that listening right now has to do is just simply go there, like them automatically, become friends, and then leave a message for him about those shows. So you and obviously you're going to be getting back with them as soon as possible. You've been really great about that with your fans.
Yeah, I've been working on that too, man, trying to contact everybody. And I've been working basically on a double priority project here, man. The first one is obviously to create my own streaming channel. with not only every Southeastern, Continental, and USA TV show I can find in chronological order, but then I want to use those shows to tell the complete story of each new studcast.
You've never explained it like that before, Stud.
Well, my goal's always been to do something no other wrestling podcast does. I want to take fans for a ride inside of the wrestling business where they learn how everything was done and why it was done in that way. Fans on the streaming channel are going to be able to not only hear the studcast, but follow the story with the actual TV show that accompanied it 44 years earlier. So doing it in that way, it kind of assures complete disclosure and an education, a complete education is going to be the result for every listener, I think.
Okay, I've always said no wrestling podcast does what you do. You open the kayfabe door, bring things down so we can understand and educate us, and now my favorite two-word explanation you've just given us, you educate us with complete disclosure. And speaking of that, where are we riding today?
We begin today with that extremely successful Birmingham event in the last studcast. I sent another top star, my brother Robert Fuller, out of Southeastern at this point. But at the same time, a huge city man that was absolutely hungry, starving for wrestling after almost a year without live matches, was set back on fire. And as I said in the last couple of studcasts, we'd been changing out the crew and had already dropped 5 wrestlers in the last month, all of those guys having left because of lose or leave matches. But we were going to gain 6 new ones in the next month. So we'll cover all that in this studcast. And our new card for this week is going to return us to Mobile. We'll find out who was on that one, the TV show for it, the results of the card. We'll talk about the attendances in all 3 of the major markets. And then hopefully we're going to have time for another learning tree question.
All right. I didn't know how you, I mean, I really, over this extended period of time, I've never understood how you do all this, Stud, but it sounds like another loaded show we've got coming our way right now. So let's start writing and let's see how far we get. How about that?
All right. So it's difficult. It's really difficult to describe what the Birmingham opening night did for Southeastern's business. It was really so much more than what any of us expected. We had no idea what to expect, really. And so I was in attendance, but I was hiding as much as possible from the fans because I'd lost the loser leave and I wasn't supposed to be in these towns. But that building was so big and that stage was so expansive and it had a big curtain across it. It was pretty easy to hide there. And since I'd lost the loser leave match to Stomper 3 weeks earlier, being on that, able to go out on that huge stage and take a look at the building made a lot of difference. I also had the manager come back to the back part of the building and I was able to deal with him as well. So the crowd was an all-time record for that building, man. With thousands turned away, the manager of the building had no idea how many got turned away. And the reaction from all those fans that were lucky enough to get into the building, and it sent chill bumps, man, my body several times that night, watching these matches with a building that was just, oh, it was just overflowing with people. And then we had Don Curtis there for this one. And he presented the Alabama championship belt to Bob Armstrong after his win in the finals against the Stomper. And 18 years, that belt was 18 years retired, man, before we got the idea of let's put this belt back in circulation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the way I described it in the last studcast. It was the defining moment, I think, of that entire event, crowning of a new Alabama champion. However, man, it wasn't the end of the night's event. Don Carson, still down at ringside with his Stomper after the belt presentation. And then, luckily, we had our man, Don Curtis there to present Bob with the belt, and then Curtis left the ring, and Stomper and Carson were still down there. Bob was still hanging around the ring. The crowd just came kind of up to the ring, and they wouldn't hardly let him out. And he was, you know, he wasn't, but you know, you know how Carson was and Stomper were at that point. They weren't satisfied with the fact that the Stomper had lost. And so they got back into the ring. And Carson motioned into the back of the building. He had some guys standing back there that I think they had planned all of it out, that they weren't going to let Bob get out of there with the belt if he won the belt. And so he waved his associates to come down to the ring. And so here came Ron Bass, the Super Pro, Jerry Stubbs. They all joined Stomper and Carson in the ring, and all five of them attacked Bob. He had his belt on. The guy, obviously, he's not going to be able to fight five of them. And they took his belt off of him. So Joe LeDuc, Norvell Austin, Mr. Wrestling, too, happened to be watching from the stage back there. And they came running down to help. But they didn't arrive there before Carson and his men had basically beat Bob down, and they took his belt away from him. And they brought this belt back to the huge stage on one end of the building there. And the crowd was totally silent. I mean, they couldn't believe, I don't think, what they had just seen. I mean, Bob won the belt. He was presented it. The big man left the area, and here comes a group of guys that take his belt away from him. So Carson and his men, they took the belt. They went to the center of that big stage. And Carson held the new Alabama championship belt up over his head, you know, and as you could imagine, the silence ended at that point. And all of a sudden, wow, the police were having to pull fans away from the stage.
Wow.
And the heels disappeared pretty quick, man, into their dressing room at that point.
Wow, I bet they did. I mean, that is crazy, Ron. All right, so they took the belt away from Bob right after Don Curtis awarded it to him.
They did, man, and not a single person left the building when that happened. They were like, well, what is this all about? Then Don Curtis, who was up in the front of the building, had gone to the front of the building. Mm-hmm. He came back to the ring, saw what was going on. He went running back to the back of the building. And wow, I mean, somebody was going to get the heck beat out of him if they weren't careful. And obviously within about 2 minutes, here he comes back to the ring with that belt.
I bet there was not a butt in a seat. I know that crowd knew something was going to be happening. Well, that is how you end the first night of Southeastern Wrestling in Birmingham. That is awesome. All right, so what did Don Curtis do about this or any of this at all?
Well, that's kind of what we're going to be discussing in the last half of this studcast when we get to the TV show for the next event. And right now, I want to take a deeper dive into what was happening as far as the talent that was coming and going during this time period here. And so let's begin with the wrestlers that had lost loser lead matches in the last 7 weeks alone in that territory. 7 weeks earlier, Tony Charles and Sweet Brown Sugar both lost loser lead matches on the same card. Plowboy's buddy, Floyd, he had to lose after Plowboy got beat by Rob a second time. I lost after that. I was gone. Plowboy and Ricky Gibson both lost a week after I got beat. And now Rob, 2 weeks after that, gets beat himself. And there's six wrestlers and a manager gone in the last 7 weeks. So in the next seven upcoming weeks, there was going to be eight new wrestlers. Six of them weren't going to wear masks, but two of those eight are going to come in wearing masks. And what was really different about this new group, man, was the quality, man, of these new wrestlers. I hate to say it, but they far surpassed most of the crew that was leaving, that had left already and was leaving. So Dennis Condren was going to make his first Southeastern Gulf Coast debut. I mean, he had worked, up in that Tennessee area quite a bit, but he had never worked in the Southeastern Gulf Coast area, never been seen by fans along the Gulf Coast. John Valiant, one of the famous New York Valiant brothers, was soon going to be making his debut. Big-time star out of New York. Oki Shikina arrived from Japan, followed the next week by Mr. Saito. And this dude was the Japanese wrestler that was going to become one of the most famous in his country before he returned home years later. He was a hoss, man. Two newly masked wrestlers that everybody's going to know who they are going to be coming in. And Jimmy Golden is going to return to the sport after many months suffering that bad back accident months later. And on top of all of that, Paul Orndorff, future Hall of Famer, is going to be arriving.
Wow, you and Bob were really loading up with a crew like that, no doubt about it. So some of the best wrestlers in the world all arriving within a 7-week period of time. Wow.
Well, that wasn't even counting, actually, man. Another one, young Brad Armstrong, who had only 3 matches under his belt at this point. And he was going to become the National Wrestling Alliance Rookie Wrestler of the Year in 1981.
Yeah.
In the upcoming year. And soon after would be the return of him. Soon after Brad, looking at Brad, we're going to get the return of a guy that was he was maybe one of the biggest stars ever in the history of that part of the country, Ken Lucas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that had to be one of the best wrestling crews maybe in the world. I can't wait to hear what Don Curtis was going to do about Don Carson and his associates trying to steal the new Alabama championship belt and ruin the big Birmingham debut for Southeastern. All right, Stud, can we get the card? I think you said was for Mobile and the rest of the territory for the third week in November of 1980. Take us back.
Okay. This card was based upon what had happened in Birmingham just 2 days before the TV show that we're going to be talking about. 2 days before it was produced, we had just had the matches in Birmingham. We had recorded a couple of those matches. We'll be talking about that. And so the opening match for this card was going to be Norvell Austin against Big C, number 2, Jerry Brown, a really, really famous tag partner for a lot of different guys, a class act too. Second match was Brad Armstrong against Jerry Stubbs. The third match was going to be Charlie Cook facing Dennis Condrey, who was a newcomer, like I said, in that part of the country. But, and he was the so-called cousin of the super pro Randy Rose. So Randy Rose claimed him as a cousin, even if he wasn't. I'm not so sure he wasn't. So the fourth match was a special challenge match between Bob Armstrong and the super pro with a very unusual set of stipulations to it. This was if Bob Armstrong won the match, the Super Pro was going to have to leave Southeastern forever. And if the Super Pro won the match, he was going to be forgiven the loss, basically, from 9 weeks earlier where he lost that Southeastern pole match to Bob Armstrong. And he had to, so he had to leave and he came back wearing the mask. But if he got the win, he was going to be able to remove his mask forever and go ahead and wrestle as Randy Rose, if that's what he wanted to do.
All right. I've never heard of a match with that kind of rules, as far as I can recall, Ron. All right. So why would the Super Pro be willing to risk having to leave Southeastern forever just to be able to take his mask off and stay if he won?
Good question, Dave. Other than the fact that it was Randy Rose and he didn't know what he was doing most of the time. So if Dennis Condrey, was about to have his first match in Southeastern Gulf Coast history, If he was truly Randy Rose's cousin, he, you know, it could have been that Rose wanted to become tag team partners with Condry and not have to wear a mask anymore. You know, it's pretty hard to wrestle with a mask on. And so, you know, it benefits you not to wrestle with a mask on. I always mm-hmm. thought. Mm-hmm. And one thing's for sure, Dennis Condry and Randy Rose, they went on to become undoubtedly maybe the greatest team in Southeastern history as the Midnight Express, man, over the next couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt. Wow. Yeah.
So the fifth match on this card was Southeastern Championship match with Mr. Wrestling 2 out of Georgia versus the champion, Mongolian Stomper. Last match of the night was a very special one, man. And it was not going to be revealed until the TV show, which was 2 days later on Saturday down there in Dothan, Alabama. And, and it was going to be based around what had happened in Birmingham because of the two matches that had been recorded.
Yeah, before we move forward, you have a little bit of experience wrestling in a mask, and one of my favorites of all time was the Wrestling Pro, who I always thought he was based out of Dothan, Alabama. I think he actually lived in Dothan. But anyway, what was it like? You said it was not easy to wrestle in a mask. Did your peripheral vision, was it affected by that, your left or right side? I mean, what was the difference about it?
Oh, man. To me, it was always, the mask has a, it depended on what kind of mask you had. Mm-hmm. I used to wear a mask that had a nose on the mask. And it always inhibited your breathing really badly. You had a little small hole where mm-hmm. your mouth was.
Yeah. Yep.
And you've got something over that's confining your nose. You have a hard time breathing. You have a hard time seeing peripherally. You can't see somebody that's behind you that you would normally be able to get a little glimpse of.
Yeah.
So it's a big disadvantage wearing a mask, but that's what you had to do if you wanted to stay in a particular part of the country. If you lost a lose-or-lead match, and that's why Randy Rose has this special stipulation with the match with Bob Armstrong, because he wants to get that mask off. He wants to wrestle. He thinks, and it's not just that you think you're better. You are a better wrestler without a mask.
Wow. And going back to the Wrestling Pro, who we've talked about here a number of times, Leon Baxter, Tarzan Baxter, I never saw him without a mask. I mean, without a mask at all in any match ever, and never saw him without a mask until many years after his retirement. We finally got to see the man behind the mask.
All right. A lot of that, Dave, obviously, too, so fans really get the idea here, is because of what he did for a living.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it was amazing how successful he was with the mask that entire time. I tell you what, talk about a surprise card, especially that last match. I don't remember anything like that before. And this, I think, is a really good place for a break. When we return, let's come back as we join Southeastern Commissioner Don Curtis for another great rating period TV show and a real surprise for everyone, plus the championship match for this TV rating period was going to be for the Southeastern Tag Championship of Ron Bass and the Super Pro against Bob Armstrong and his son Brad. It was the Armstrongs' first ever tag match as a tag team together. And that is coming up when this Studcast continues right here. Okay, Studcast fans, Ron's streaming channel is becoming a monster. It already has hundreds of hours of videos of his 7+ years recording shows of all kinds on the subject of professional wrestling. It already has hundreds of hours of Southeastern, Continental, and USA TV shows. With more being added every day, it will no doubt be one of the largest wrestling streaming channels in the world. Be listening each week now during the Studcast, because he'll soon announce the debut of both the streaming channel and the completely new Studcast. Thanks to everyone for your patience. It'll definitely be worth it. All right, Studcast fans, welcome back. It's another Studcast that is really going to be hard to beat. This is episode number 377. 377 of these. This one is called Bob and Brad Win Belts, Carson's Trouble. All right, before the break, it sounded like this TV show was going to be something really special, Stud. Lay it out for us.
Well, man, it really was a special one, Dave, in a lot of ways. It was, right off the top, it was a celebration of a wrestling company that wasn't quite 3 years old. We'd only been down there since March of 1978, and we had just opened the largest market in the history of Southeastern, and to a dramatic success, I got to add, we packed a 56-year-old Boutwell Auditorium with an all-time record crowd.
Wow.
And it was also the tag team debut of what would become one of the greatest families in the history of the sport.
All right. What was the first thing that fans saw after the opening of the TV show?
Well, the show opened up right out of the, you know, they had the little deal with the wrestlers of wrestling each other and, that we did as an opening for every show. But as soon as that went away, there was this slow panning shot, man, of the massive crowd in Birmingham. Followed that by the Southeastern Commissioner Don Curtis, who was sitting at the set with Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, and they welcomed him, and so did the fans in the studio. They announced that this TV show was going to be a historic one, that this week's championship TV match, which we were doing, in each one of these, this month of November, that this week's championship match was going to be for the Southeastern Tag Belts with the champions Ron Bass and the Super Pro defending against a tag team that was going to have their first tag match together as a team, Bob Armstrong and his son Brad. And wow, did the studio explode on that one. And then they announced Don Curtis was going to be on the personality profile for this week. And he had some very important match he was going to talk about during the personality profile. So Curtis was very excited, man, about some of what had happened in Birmingham 2 days earlier. But he was there, he said, for more than just a celebration. He said he wanted to discuss some of the things that had occurred in Birmingham's opening night. I guess that's what's going to happen in the profile. And then Charlie and Les thanked him for being there. And he got another round of applause as he left the set.
Okay, so who was the first TV match? Set that up.
Well, the Mongolian Stomper, man. He had his Southeastern belt on. And he was brought out of the dressing room by, obviously, Don Carson. But the strange thing was, Dave, he was totally under control for the first time ever on TV, you know. And that was mainly because I guess Carson had seen Don Curtis sitting there to open the show. and as a show of respect, I guess is a good way of putting it,
yeah,
from Carson and the Stomper, since Don was there, there was no pandemonium in the studio this time.
All right, so I bet a lot of fans started to bolt for the exits when the Stomper first appeared, as they usually did. I think Don Carson knew he was already in trouble with Don Curtis, the commissioner, but because of what happened in Birmingham, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about that later in this program. All right, so who was the Stomper's opponent? Who was on for the Stomper?
Well, you know, this was a great TV. We wanted to make these TVs in November as good as we could. And we didn't give the Stomper an easy opponent here, man. He was wrestling Charlie Cook, and Charlie Cook was a hoss. Curtis was, you know, Curtis being there was already affecting the quality of this TV show in the very first match. I mean, you know, we went out of our way to say, let's put one of our best in there against there, because not only is it for during the rating period, but you got the big man here. So Charlie and Les had invited Mr. Wrestling too to join them in the set to watch the match, because he was going to be wrestling the Mongolian Stomper during the course of that next week. So Wrestling too was already over in the territory, man, because he had been on that Ted Turner's WTBS, the satellite TV station out of Atlanta. And Atlanta was Wrestling 2's home.
Mm-hmm.
So the masked man had nothing but respect during the time he sat there and talked during the match about respect for the Southeastern champion, Mongolian Stomper. And who wouldn't have? I mean, there he was one of the baddest wrestlers on earth. And he was about to face him for the championship belt in the coming week in three of Southeastern's major markets. So Charlie Cook was never an easy opponent to beat, man. And he was really pushing the Stomper in this match to the point where Don Carson had to attract the referee's attention. And that allowed the Stomper to take a little shortcut and kind of cut him off there at that point. And he kind of cheated a little bit. Imagine that.
What?
And he beat Charlie Cook. But what a great match, though, to open a TV show with.
All right, so who was in the second TV match?
Well, it was Dennis Condrey, who was a newcomer to all these fans sitting in that studio. But he was a newcomer in this territory, but he wasn't a newcomer in the other territory. And Dennis Condrey was a tag team specialist. And he was great in tag teams. And he had been a Southeastern Knoxville tag team champion with Phil Hickerson, managed by Ron Wright, up there in almost the entire year in 1978. And then after that, he spent more years in the Memphis territory, in the Mid-American territory of Nick Gulas, him and the same guy, Phil Hickerson. But he was a great tag wrestler. The Super Pro came out of the dressing room with him. It was Condrey's first match, but when Condrey came out of the dressing room, he was followed by the Super Pro. And the Super Pro went to the set to talk with Charlie and Les, uninvited. He was not scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
But when he got there, he had a pretty interesting story to tell about Dennis Condrey. And then another one about the most unusual match. One of the most unusual matches in Southeastern history that was going to be coming up the next week, too.
Hmm.
That crazy matching with Bob Armstrong.
Right.
So while Condrey was exhibiting his extensive wrestling repertoire, which they really had, this guy could wrestle, Super Pro was explaining that Dennis Condrey was his cousin. And he had brought him in here, he said, for a reason. But he never explained the reason. Without explaining the reason, he just brought up another subject. And he brought up the fact that he had this upcoming special event against Bob Armstrong the next week. And that was going to allow him to remove his mask and to stay in Southeastern, even though he had lost the loser leave match. So he explained his situation about having to wear a mask. And how it had occurred months ago when he lost the loser leave pole match to Bob Armstrong. And he had proposed to Southeastern, and they in turn proposed to Bob Armstrong a second loser leaves match that Bob Armstrong accepted. He listened to it. And if you noticed, Bob wasn't going to have to do anything if he lost, he wasn't going to have to leave or anything.
Right.
And it was all stipulations that was making it tough on the old Super Pro. So this was going to be another potential loser leave match, where if he lost again, he was going to have to leave Southeastern immediately. And the deal was he would never be able to return, mask or no mask, if he lost this time. But if he won, he was going to get to remove the mask that he was now wearing, stay in Southeastern, use his real name, Randy Rose, if he wanted to.
Okay, so that was the special event on the next Southeastern card throughout the territory? All right, and really, to me, if that's the case, what a unique match that was going to be. All right, how is Dennis Condrey doing in the ring with all of this going on at the set?
Well, he was wowing the fans, man, in the bleachers there. He was doing some moves that they had never seen. And he ended the match with his own brand of a clothesline, a ferocious one. I guess that's a good word for it. And he had his guy beat, and he had him kind of hanging on the ropes, and he grabbed the guy by the wrist with one hand, and it looked like he was going to shoot him across the ring to the ropes on the other side and do something to him. But instead of shooting him across the ropes, he jerked him off the ropes, and then he viciously clotheslined him across the throat with his other arm. And at the same time, when the guy started down, he went down on top of him with all his weight.
Wow.
It was a punishing move. Studio crowd went, ooh, the whole crowd like, oh, gosh. I
bet. Wow.
You know, it was devastating. So in the Super Pro, oh, my gosh, he jumped up from the set. He just left Charlie and Les and ran to the ring, shot in the, under the ropes, and he raised his cousin's hand, man. Hot dog. he was glad to see him.
All right, that sounded like a very impressive victory for the brand new Dennis Condrey.
It was, man. And not only for the fans in the studio, which are several of the guys in our dressing room. The dressing room was over there with Rob and Bob. And so they were watching these guys, watching the monitor. They had one in every dressing room. And they had never, the guys that had never seen him before, well, those two guys, you know, on the other, when Bob's dressing room, Norvell Austin, you know, over the next couple of years, Norvell Austin is going to become a part of this great tag team, in a three-man tag called the Midnight Express. So,
wow.
You know, it was guys were learning a lot when they watched Dennis Condrey in this particular match.
All right, so here we go against this TV was off to another great start, and we're about to hear from the Southeastern Commissioner, Don Curtis, in this personality profile. So tell us about that.
Well, Dave, this one, man, was with Charlie and Les, and they were sitting on both sides of it. Don sitting in the middle of the profile set. And they were both extremely complimentary of Don Curtis, and they complimented him on how well he had taken care of Southeastern's business and how fast the company was making a name for himself. Not just in America, but around the world, and they discussed the recent, never-before-done triple world championship cards, and now they were going to have this worldwide attention Southeastern was getting from the tremendous opening night, Birmingham, Alabama, two nights earlier. So Don thanked them for their kind remarks and about how well he was taking care of Southeastern business, but he said he was here not for that, but after what happened in Birmingham, he said he was more concerned about what he wasn't doing for the fan. Well, they were both surprised by that response, and they asked him, "What is it that you haven't done? What are we missing here, man?" You know. So he said, he said he'd been thinking about it, and it appeared to him that he had been allowing too many loser leave matches too quickly. And he had lost some of the great wrestlers in history as a result. And he told them that two of them in particular were from the same family. One of them, he said, he was very proud of that in his first 4 years in the sport, he had become a star, not only in the home state of Florida, but around the world. And they asked, well, who are you talking about? And he told them, he said, I'm talking about one of the Fuller brothers. The older one, Ron, you know, and he said that he had recently watched the Loser Leave Southeastern match between me and the Mongolian Stomper, and he said he was appalled at the outcome, and appalled at how many wrestlers it took to beat me in that loss, you know, and so he continued saying that he'd taken the liberty of presenting the production crew upstairs with two videos from the recent Birmingham night, the huge success. And he asked them upstairs to run the first video. And it showed the end of Robert's Loser Leave match, and that Robert was in the eighth match in the tournament in the first round, and whoever lost was going to leave the territory. And it kind of filled in what he talked about, what Curtis was talking about, these Loser Leave matches. And so he, So that was in the first round of the tournament, and you know, it showed Rob losing the match, and then he pointed out again, as in my loser leave match, in which there was a lot of outside interference. Robert had outside interference from several wrestlers in his match, right? So he asked them upstairs then to run the next video that he had left him. And this one was of the very last match in the tournament, Bob Armstrong versus the Mongolian Stomper. And again, this match had a lot of outside interference, but none of it really basically until the match was over. And after the match was over and everything should have been taken care of, belt was presented and all that, that's when you had some outside interference. And the video showed all of this and exactly what happened. So it was about that time in the video, you know, after the match was over and Curtis had left the ring, that Ron Bass, the Super Pro, Jerry Stubbs, they showed up at the ring with Don Carson, and the Mongolian Stomper was still there. And all five of them attacked Bob. He was there by himself, and they took his belt away from him. And then it showed Joe LeDuc and Norvell Austin coming down to the ring. And as the five thieves, I think the word he used was, you know, and these five thieves end up stealing the belt, you know. And said, and they ran away to the center of the huge stage in the back of the building. And then the video showed Don Carson holding the Alabama championship belt over his head as if he were the new champion. And so the video ended with Curtis, you know, after retrieving the belt and carrying it back to the ring, gave it to Bob for the second time. And the crowd obviously exploded again. And as I said earlier, nobody had left that building. 7,000 people were still there. They wanted to see if he was going to get that belt back, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
So then Curtis then, he called out Don Carson. He says, Don Carson, you're back there in the dressing room. He said, I want you to come to this set right now. So the studio crowd, as soon as Carson came out of the dressing room door, the studio crowd started booing him like crazy. So, and I was at home, you know, I'd lost the loser leave. I hadn't gone to another territory. And, you know, I was home watching this TV. And at this point, I had no idea what they was going to do. What's this all about? You know, what's he going to do? So you could tell Carson was horrified at Don Curtis. And most wrestlers were. Don Curtis was a tremendous shooter, a tough son of a gun. And in fact, Carson was so afraid of him, he says, yes, sir, Mr. Curtis. He says, what can I do for you, sir? So he was already kissing butt.
What?
Curtis said, you know, he said, you know, in all of these videos that I've watched, he said, there's one person always there that shouldn't be. And he said, that's you, Don Carson, you know. And he says, here's what I'm going to do. He said, since you always seem to want to be involved in everything, he said, I'm going to make you a part of this week's main event. He said, you and your vigilantes. He called them vigilantes. Ron Bass, Super Pro, and Jerry Stubbs are going to be facing Joe LeDuc, Norvell Austin, Bob Armstrong, and his son, Brad Armstrong. He said, and I'm going to make it a best 2 out of 3 falls, 8-man tag match. And he goes, and if you're on the losing team, Don, he says, your partners are going to return to the dressing room. And all four of those men who just won the match are going to have 1 minute alone with you to do anything they want. I've never heard a studio audience pop like that before, man.
Yeah, I bet.
And they didn't stop until Carson. Carson just took off to the dressing room. He didn't say anything. He was like, oh, my God. And he disappeared in the dressing room.
What a fantastic personality profile that was. So I know, and I keep saying it, but that one really had to be the best one ever. All right, who was up next, stud?
Well, Wrestling 2, Mr. Wrestling 2. And this was basically his second week in a row to be on the TV show. Because Rob was over there in Georgia at that point and doing the booking, he had given us a second week for Wrestling 2 to be there, other than that Birmingham tournament. So it was the normal, you know. He was normally there on Saturdays in Atlanta at WTBS. So Bob was handling this TV show, obviously, because Rob was already over in Georgia, and I was sitting at home. So Bob put Iron Mike Masters, who was a pretty good wrestler, man, the young New York guy, in the ring with Mr. Wrestling, too. And they had another really, really good television match. And naturally, Wrestling 2 won, man, and he won it with that, with his bionic knee lift, I called it, man. I mean, he when he caught you with that, you were in the middle of next week.
It was kind of done time. All right, so was it time for the championship match of the week?
It certainly was, man. And wow, this one was really special, man. The tag champions, Ron Bass and the Super Pro, they entered the ring first. They were wearing their belts. They were followed by Don Carson, who was their manager, basically. And wow, they came out to a bevy of boos, man, from the studio crowd. And then the studio crowd went nuts because they really didn't know that Bob and Brad were going to be there, you know, or they didn't make a big deal about it in the first of the show. So when Bob Armstrong and Brad came running out of that dressing room and going to the ring, boy, they went crazy. Fans always loved Bob, but I'd never seen them get behind a young star like they had Brad, man. They just seemed to love Brad almost as much as Bob. So this match, man, was everything you wanted to see. If you were a booker or owner of a wrestling company and you had a television show, this is what you would want on there. And just the fact that the Armstrongs were a father and son combination was enough. But there was something magic about these two when they were together. And so Brad started the match. He made a lot of good wrestling moves early part of the match. But they finally stopped him, and they started beating him down, which, you know, they knew they were going to have a hard time doing that to Bob. So, you know, they took advantage of him, and they beat him down pretty good. And that studio went crazy while that was going on. And you would have thought that they were taking a beating themselves, so the studio audience.
Wow.
So when Brad finally tagged Bob, I mean, the roof flew off that TV station, man. Bob went wild, as usual, and both of the other men went flying in all directions. And so Bob threw the Super Pro into the ropes, and he kicked him in the stomach, and then he went right straight back to Bass. And the Super Pro is still bent over, basically, and right in the middle of the ring, and from the kick to the stomach. And Brad had been laying out there for a couple of minutes, saw Bob make a big comeback, and he sees the Super Pro bent over there, and he shot in the ring. He bent over next to him. He reached across his body and grabbed him by the chin with his right hand, and he wrapped his right leg around the Super Pro's left leg, and he threw both their bodies backwards, man, as hard and as fast as he could. And they both landed with a tremendous thud, man. Wow. That Russian leg sweep was a beautiful hold. And then when they landed, Brad floated over him, man, like it was a hot air balloon across his body, and he wrapped him up for the pin. And a star was born at that moment.
You bet. Wow.
So when the referee hit the three count, there wasn't a single person sitting on the bleachers. I mean, everybody in the place was on their feet, and I'm sure they made so much noise, I'm sure they could hear that crowd 7 miles away downtown Dothan.
Oh, I bet. I mean, that description made me, it just made me feel like I was just right there, Ron. Bob and Brad were really a great team, regardless of whether they were father and son, but I think that made them even better, and from the beginning. This TV has been a real experience, and what wrestling was all about back in the day. So what happened in the arenas on that card the following week?
Roy Lee Welch basically got the pleasure, man, of working with one of the sports greats, Big C number two, real name was Jerry Brown, one of the famous Hollywood Blondes team with another guy named Buddy Roberts, who's going to become one of the Free Birds. And I had wrestled that Hollywood Blondes team, Buddy Roberts and Jerry Brown, many times in Florida in my early years in the early 1970s. Jerry Brown was finishing up, and I was basically sad to see him go, man. He was one of those classic wrestlers that was great to have in your crew. Brad was wrestling Jerry Stubbs in that second match, and wow, what a match! I didn't get to see this, but Bob described it to me. It was a 20-minute time limit draw, but Bob said there was nobody sitting down at the end of it. Dennis Condrey started making his legend. It was his first night there. Then during the course of this week, and he won over Charlie Cook, and he won it with one of those wicked clotheslines, like the one he had done on TV. And in that special event between Bob Armstrong and the Super Pro, the Pro won. But he had to have the help of somebody that just arrived, and that happened to be his cousin. And as Condrey sneaked down there, referee got knocked down, and he ended up with Randy Rose pinning Bob Armstrong, which wow. was very unusual.
Yeah.
But it took two of them. So the Super Pro was allowed to remove his mask and to stay in Southeastern as Randy Rose. Mongolian Stomper lost his match against Mr. Wrestling 2 by disqualification. But Wrestling 2 was going to get one more try at him. There was going to be another set of matches the following week, and this was going to be a no disqualification match with him and to give him a better opportunity to win the belt.
Okay, so it was time for that special Don Curtis match. Best 2 out of 3 falls. 8-man tag match with the two Armstrongs, Joe LeDuc and Norvell Austin, against Ron Bass, the Super Pro, now Randy Rose, Jerry Stubbs, and Don Carson. So what happened in that one, especially what happened to Don Carson?
So the Babyfaces won all three of those matches, Bob told me. And, he said, Don Carson had to be carried back to the dressing room after all three of them, too. He said, as soon as that timekeeper said we set the 1-minute deal and rang the bell, and he said it was just Don in there with all four of them. He said that was the craziest minute he'd ever seen in the sport. He said fans were going nuts. He said they did everything you could do to Don Carson in a minute. And then they had to come and get him, his team, and carry him back to the dressing room.
All right. I believe that. I believe every word of that. All right. So how about the attendances? And it doesn't matter where you are, but for these three markets, any market, this had to be really good. How'd that go?
Well, I think the last minute main event match that was kind of added on the TV show by Don Curtis had a lot to do with this card, you know, and it brought a lot of fans back that wanted like you, Dave, to see Don Carson get his comeuppance, man. So it was the hardest time of year for wrestling, though. From after Thanksgiving to Christmas night, for all wrestling promotions across the country. Obviously, crowd fell off a little bit because we'd been having such huge crowds. So Montgomery fell from 4,500 to 3,800, which was about, 700 or so. But, gosh, it was still great compared to most territories during this time of year. Dothan dropped from 48 to 42, only down about 600. And Mobile, for the first time in months, didn't quite get to 6,000. They had 5,800 instead of 6,000. So, you know, I wasn't a bit upset by that, though, because of the time of year it was, and I kind of expected it.
Yeah, you know, keeping people's attention is hard enough that time of year for anything, but you guys really did a good job on that. And, I mean, with those numbers, even if you were down by a couple of hundred in a market, I know that can be some impact, but it still had to be feel like a successful event anyway. All right, so where are we going to be riding next week, Ron? How do you top this baby?
Well, Birmingham, you might notice, fans notice probably, that Birmingham didn't run this week. We didn't talk anything about Birmingham. We wanted to get the fans in Birmingham that had always been accustomed to Monday nights being wrestling night, since this first card that was on a Thursday night, we wanted to wait to come back to another Monday, the second Monday, after we'd had this first match, this first card. So they are in the next one. We're going to be talking about their card, their second card, right? And so Mobile fans, we're going to be on that same week that we're going to be talking about next week. It's going to be Thanksgiving night. And we're going to be in the main arena again with a Thanksgiving card on November 27, 1980. We're going to announce the new card, the one that covers the TV show, promoting it. We'll talk about the results of the card. And next week, for the first time next week, we're going to talk about four major markets attendances, because it'll be the first time that all four of these cities have run in the same week. So, and I'm going to continue to update everybody on what's happening, basically, with the new Studcast, man, and the new streaming channel. We're getting very close at this point, man, but putting it all together and creating what I believe is going to be the best Studcast ever, and also one of the best, if not the best, streaming channel ever.
Okay, I think this has really been a great Studcast, with so much information about the future of Studcast and your new streaming channel. And I'm sorry, but we're not going to have time for a learning tree question this week, but hopefully next week we'll get back to that, because that is always just slam full of cool historic information. All right, folks, you know how to get up with Ron. You find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend on Twitter, also known as X. He is Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com, tnstud.com. This Studcast is going to be there with every Studcast ever done. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 super Studcasts, four different 8x10 photos, and the best-selling novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you. And subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind, Southeastern Rewind on YouTube. Find hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment, 452 total videos, the last 155 Studcast, Ask the Stud shows, and Short Rides with the Stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic stud stories with worldwide stars, Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More, fan question shows, superstars of the past, and much more. That's YouTube Southeastern Rewind. It's the best deal in wrestling. All right. Any final comments today, Stud?
Yeah. I look forward to opening, man, the new streaming channel to everyone, and finishing the new Studcast in the way that I want to, that I have always wanted to do it. And so thanks, everybody, for your continued support. Please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955 and on Twitter or X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production. For Tennessee Stud, LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.